हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Going through that, what do you call it? Reflectionism. What was it? Didn't it give some name for that? Oh, that's on this paper here. Oh, but this is causation, not reflectionism.
Yeah.
Satkaryavada is causation.
Yes.
Okay. Two major proponents of the Shankya theory of reflectionism, Vijnana Bhikshu and Vachaspati Mishra, hold differing views. According to Vijnana Bhikshu, the knowledge of an object takes place when there is a reciprocal reflection of the self in the intellect having been modified into the form of the object, and of the intellect in the self. All right, so self and intellect and self. So but it's already taking the point is that the intellect has already taken the form of the object that's being perceived. Right? Does that make sense? Does it make sense? It doesn't mean that your intellect suddenly takes the shape of a chair, but it means that it is perceiving it as a chair. It's taken that form. You call it a chair. Right? Because when the dog walks by, it's not a chair. Right? Does that make sense? Is that somehow that funny position that people sit in, that you know that separates them from you know the food that's on, I mean the dog from the food that's on the table, you know like that. So the point is the intellect identifies it as a chair, so it takes that form. So now when the intellect then identifies with that, I mean when the soul identifies with that. Right, so then that means the soul is reflected into the intellect, so that potency is there that it can take on that shape. But then the intellect is now reflected back into the soul, that the soul is taking that and identifying with it. Right? So when that reciprocal element takes place, because the intelligence can't see, right? Because it's dead matter, it's not conscious. But it's the example is given of the mirror. If you have a mirror and you have a light, you've reflected off the mirror, it will shine on something else and make it appear to be light. But the mirror isn't light. So the mirror is not conscious. The soul is conscious. So that consciousness is reflected on the like that mirror of the intelligence. And then you're able to perceive the object. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have a some kind of hardware. You plug it into the computer. Right? But the hardware doesn't have any electrical potency of its own. But it uses the potency of the computer. Right? It's not plugged into the current. Right? So through it's simply taking the potency of the computer, and that's what's making it work. So the intellect is simply taking the consciousness of the soul and then reflecting that onto the object. And then by experience, then it's identifying that as a chair. So now it takes the form of a chair. So now that is now reflected back to the soul. So when the soul is reflecting on the intelligence on the soul, then that's this reflectionism. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, how is the soul seeing? How is it doing when it's not a doer? When it's not involved, it's only a witness. That means the intellect, the mind, the senses, the body are doing all the action. The soul is inactive. right? But it's desiring. It has the desire to be involved, right? Like we were discussing this morning. Desire is what it has. So this desire, this is actually how it's being carried out. Because we're thinking very much, I'm doing this, I'm seeing this and this and that. No, this is actually what's going on. Right? So it kind of limits one's enthusiasm that, yes, I'm the controller, you know, and enjoyer of the whole material creation, right? I'm not even seeing and doing what I'm seeing now. It's simply the body and that's doing it. But it's using the potency of the consciousness of the jiva to do it because it's dead matter, so it's reflecting it. So like when it says the mirror of the mind, it's the same thing. Then our desires are there, but it's simply the consciousness. We're conscious of things. And so things are picked, but it's due to our consciousness that it's there. Otherwise, mind as dead matter is not going to do anything. Right? Intelligence is not going to do anything. Does that make sense? The senses aren't. Because as soon as the soul leaves, it's not that all that's going on and just we're not around to take part in it. Right? No, it just stops. Yeah.
So the same mechanics goes on only, I mean, this mechanics only goes on in the material world.
Yes, no, in the spiritual world, it's you have spiritual senses and spiritual mind, spiritual mind.
So they're all conscious by themselves? They don't
no, it's just you. Because here, your real intelligence, real senses, real body is covered. So therefore, you're identifying with this material one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say, if we took you and put you into a machine, you know... Does that make sense? And so you want to move here and there, the machine is moving, doing all these things. And so you think, but you identify with that. See, you don't even think that I'm actually different. So you think, I'm doing all that. You want to pick something up, the machine picks it up. You understand? That's what's happening. But your real form, but here, the spiritual form, it's not that you're moving your spiritual hand and then the machine's moving its material hand. No, it's that you're just 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. Right? When you get back to the spiritual world, then the spiritual form, all that, is that's what you're using. That's why it says through Siddhi, now you have this, you have gotten it. It's there, but you don't have it. Right? You know, it's kind of like, you know, I think Jiva Goswami gives the example of when you go into the place, all your outside, you know, those clothes from that, you're coming from outside. And so then the outside clothes get left at the door. You know what I'm saying? And then you go inside. You know, so your coat, your hat, your this, that gets left at the door. Right? So when we're coming into the material world, it gets left. Does that make sense? Because we're in the spiritual world, that you leave that to come into the material world. So it just stays there. Does that make sense? Yes.
So the soul...
It means we're on reflectionism here, not on how the soul fell and... If we came from here and did we have love of God, did we come from Goloka, all that, right?
Yes. The soul already has all these spiritual elements. It's in the soul, or we are getting it when we are getting spiritual body?
No, it's non-different.
It's already in the soul, all these...
It means the form is the soul. But here you're 1/10,000 the tip of a hair. Yes.
Maharaj, when we talk about soul, we Shastras also mention about a specific location that the soul is in the region of the heart, floating
right.
On those.
Yes, yes.
So how about mind and intelligence?
They're also there, that same place.
So they are also localized at that particular
place? Yes, yes. Means that's the amount of intelligence and mind you have. Because otherwise there's unlimited amounts of that. Right? Just like there's unlimited... Earth atoms, and then some of that is put together as what we call Earth. But there's more of it, right? There's covering on the universe. The first one is Earth, and it's 10 times thicker than what is the size of the space inside. So it's 2 billion miles across. Right? I think it's actually 4 billion. Right? I don't remember, it's 4 billion across. 2 is full of water. Right? So that means it's 40 billion miles thick. That's just the earth atoms, right? So then only a small portion of that is manifest as earth elements here that we see, So the same is then after that is, you know, water, then fire, then it, so you, the amount of, you know, mind and intelligence is even bigger than that. Right? Basically, once I think I sat down and calculated, if the Earth was, I mean, if inside the universe was like, you know, basically, well, an inch, so that in centimeters would be, what, about two something, 2.5 centimeters, right? Then the coverings would be basically from here to Krishnanagar. You know, so we generally look at this big universe, a little bit of covering on it. No, it's a lot of covering, and then inside there's this little space, because they want to make sure that the criminals don't get out. Right? So this is like really, you know, we talk about what it's got, high security, you know, prisons. This is high security. You know, nobody gets out. Right? So.
And also that everything in this world, it said that it's a combination of 5 gross and 3 subtle elements. So, like, is everything what gross matter also, which we see, or mind or intelligence? It also has the elements of gross in it, like mind if we take. Does it also have earth, water, fire, ether in it?
No. It means it's an element itself. You know what I'm saying? It may have... means it has the nature that it can take on the qualities of all those. Otherwise, how does it relate to? How does the mind control the senses which deal with all the senses, sense objects, the tanmatras, the elements, all that kind of thing, that group of 20, right? So how does it do that unless it has that ability? It has to have that inherent characteristic. But that's the point, is the mind can control the senses and sense objects. Does that make sense? Okay.
A question about reflection. It means to have pure knowledge of the objects means there is a pure reciprocation?
It means the pure is that you see it in relationship to the Lord. In other words, according to Shastra. That will be actually the pure reflection. Mm-hmm. Because then you're seeing it in relationship to the Lord. Right? But if you're not seeing it in relationship to the Lord, it's actually not pure knowledge, because the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion will be there.
Yes, in Shankya explanation.
No, because it mentions Vyasa. This theory of reflectionism is also accepted by Vyasa in his commentary on the Yoga Sutras. It's just how it works. See, generally when it talks about it, we just talk about the intelligence, you know, sees like this, and the mind then does that, and so many different things. That's all the more we have to get into. But here is, because we're dealing with these bigger things of the soul and his relationship with the Lord. Right? So that's important, is this consciousness. And therefore this higher element. But here in the Shankya, this atheistic Shankya, but even in just in general, it's dealing with the element of just what are the mechanics of the material world, and with the ideas that therefore you can understand you're not that. Because otherwise I'm thinking, yes, I'm seeing this, I'm desiring that, I'm doing all this, you know. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and, you know, that should be for Krishna, but it's also... But here it's just showing you're not doing anything. Yes. Whether you're doing it for Krishna or not doing it for Krishna, you're not the one doing it. That's the nice thing about it. It just in detail breaks down the material phenomena that you actually understand. I'm just the jiva, and that's it, and I'm conscious. Right? Now the question is, do you apply pure consciousness onto this whole process, or polluted consciousness? Because if it's polluted consciousness, then the intelligence is going to identify objects of enjoyment, control and enjoyment. Yes. If it's pure consciousness, you're going to identify objects for service. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the point is the soul is only going to identify with those things that it has a value in. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you see so many things, but nobody notices that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, so let's say, you know, you have some tourists, right? And because they're in Paris, you have to go to the Louvre, right? It's just, you have to do, right? You know, it's one of those things. Now, when the family goes in there, you know, the lady will notice, you know, the niceness of things, at least the pleasantness and all, whether she appreciates the art or not, it's another thing. And then the guy, you know, of course, will have to, you know, say a few things, you know, like this and that, you know, because he has to do. But the kids will really appreciate that there's a bench there, right? And then they'll sit down on that, you know. And that, you know, and the daughter will get out her phone and start texting and all that, and the kid will get out his little, you know, whatever it is, you know, Grand Theft Auto or something, and start playing that, and, you know, like that. And does that make sense? So all they see in the whole thing was, you know, and then when you ask after, you know, what's going on, and what the texting is, wow, this is boring, and, you know, being here with the parents, and, you know. So even though all that's coming in, they don't see any of it because they don't identify with it because there's nothing there for them to enjoy. So it's they don't even see what's there. You know, so maximum probably they'll go away with, you know, the father and the mother and probably the daughter will notice Mona Lisa. Mm-hmm. Right, Dad. You know, the son may or may not. If he's a little bigger, he might notice, but if he's not, he won't. So of all the things in the whole place and they've been in there for hours, that's the only thing that they might remember. No? Like that. So that's all. It's because of the polluted consciousness, therefore has those secondary features of attachment, right? Remember we said there was, in the creation, in the beginning, there's the false ego. Then after that, there's, again, we see false ego. So the first one is the polluted consciousness that I'm controlling the drawer. The second one is I'm identifying, yes, I am this particular body. I have these particular desires and interests. So when we talk about false ego, it can mean all of the false ego, or we can simply mean the polluted consciousness, then ego and goodness, ego and passion, ego and ignorance. So generally when we think about it, it's ego and passion, goodness and ignorance, but we just identify it as one, right? The material, like that. The other one is what's there before the material, but it's the cause of it. So that's the causal body. Right? So that's the, you know, that false ego, we call the causal body. Because you have the gross body that you're in now, the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and the specific false ego. But you have the false ego that I'm the controller and enjoyer, which is actually the cause of having this one. Because if you think I'm not the controller and enjoyer, then this one goes away. It means it'll stay long enough to, you know, go back to Godhead. That's why when we say we get rid of the reactions, some say we want to get rid of all of them. You can't get rid of all of them because the body and the gross and subtle body are reactions of your previous actions. So if you get rid of that, you have nothing. Right, so then just a little jiva floating around. Now, what are you going to do there? Right, you know, there's no mind, intelligence, anything to reflect off of. So it's just like, you know, it's just Brahman there. So that's no good. That's like frying pan into the fire, kind of. Is that okay? Yeah. So this is just the mechanics of what's happening. Now that this is, its value is no more than. We understand that what is my consciousness is actually how things are going to reflect. So when my consciousness is polluted, naturally the intelligence, what it's reflecting, will be polluted. Only because it will take polluted forms. It won't be taking pure forms. Pure consciousness, pure forms. It doesn't mean the form is different. It means, is the chair for my enjoyment or is the chair for serving Krishna? For my enjoyment is polluted, right? So therefore, there may be opportunities to serve Krishna, but with polluted consciousness, you won't see them, right? Because as we said, you just see what you value. Even though the senses are pulling in unlimited information, I think in modern science they say it's like 40,000 bits of information a sense pulls in, I think, every minute, right? But we reduce it down to one. That's what the mind does. It means all this is there, so it just throws it all out and just takes one. But the senses are pulling that in, so that means that's controlled by the intelligence. Intelligence is the actual manager of the mechanics of the senses. But all that's coming in, but the mind that selects one thing. Right? And then through the memory, which is part of the intelligence, then figures out, okay, what is this? You know, and then having figured out what it is by past experience, then it decides, do I accept it or reject it? But the intelligence seeing it is before the mind has accepted it or rejected it. So you can see there's an option for service. But then the mind may take it, or the mind may not take it. Right? Is that what you're saying? Is this? Yeah. So all it does is it breaks it down. So two things are there. One is that it, for us, it breaks it down that you see I'm not actually the controller and enjoyer. Right? But we have service to do. Right? So having understood I'm not the controller and enjoyer, therefore take up the mood of service. Right? Because that element of that prema and service to the Vaishnavas and that preaching compassion, that's what we keep ourselves busy with. Right? So it's a moment here and there that we use it for as that technique to break down the material. For the Shankhya, you know, especially it means that for the non-theistic, right? Because we're the theistic Shankhya. For the non-theistic, they don't have anything else to do all day. So this is how they keep themselves busy. Otherwise they get bored. So if they can't function at this level of intellect, they don't have anything to do. Right? Does that make sense there? So that's what they'll do all day. Yeah.
So we can say that none of those philosophies, they even get to the point I'm not the control and the enjoyer?
None of them. Not one of them. Not even Shankara. He'll refer to it, but none of his followers catch it. You know, like I said, he wrote a book on Radha and Krishna and worship of Radha and Krishna. And the Shankarites will never mention it, but if you bring it up, they'll agree he wrote it. But I remember hearing one pundit say, I have no idea why you wrote it. It's kind of like, why would a Mayavadi write a book on this, you know? You know, does that make sense? You know, like that. You know, be just like, how you say, your lead, you know, lead singer, you know, in the lead, you know, let's say, grunge band. But he's given a commentary on, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony and all the technical points of the music and all the embellishments and why it's so, you know, intellectually and musically so well made. It's just like, why would he do that? You know? You know, it's just this. They, for them, it's not there, you know, or, you know, the guy is leading the Green Revolution, you know, is a major shareholder in Exxon or something. You know, it's just, you know, it's just like, why would he do that? So to them, it just doesn't make any sense, so they just don't think about it. So they don't catch it. He's actually telling the idiots, be a devotee, you know. But, you know, whatever.
What does it mean when the mind and intelligence are the sitting places of this lust?
Of this lust, because your lust, your desire, that's where it'll sit. Because otherwise, how does it manifest? You have the desire to control and enjoy, but that's just general. So it has to sit somewhere where it can actually be applied. So the mind then chooses according to that. The intelligence finds the options. Right? Mind and intelligence finds sees what's there. Mind decides what it will take and what to do with it. Is that something? So that's why if you change the consciousness, they're no longer seats of lust. Right? But in other words, you're trying to find some way to get at this. So you can either get at it from the consciousness, get at it from there. Some way, in either way, from frontwards, backwards, from the side, is up. You're trying to catch where I can start to bring Krishna into it. You know, that's the nice thing, is because it's all Krishna. So at any point you can add Krishna and it'll purify the rest of it. You know what I'm saying? Like if I light some incense and stick it over here, it'll go eventually through the whole room. You know, but if I can't stick it here, I can stick it over there. It'll eventually get through the whole room. So that's the nice thing, is it doesn't matter where you start in the philosophy. If at any point you connect it to Krishna, you'll get all the rest of it. Right? You know, it's just like we're reading about the neophyte devotee. He's proud of his material accomplishment and thinks doing that accomplishment, that's the devotional service, rather than doing it for Krishna, is the devotional service. But even having that consciousness that's not actually pure, that he's doing it to Krishna, it purifies and he actually gets the spiritual benefit. So he'll advance. Right? But now, a Madhyama having that consciousness, it wouldn't be good for advancing. But for the neophyte, it doesn't get in the way. You know what I'm saying? Not in the beginning. Right? As he matures, it will get in the way. Then anartha nivritti. So anartha nivritti is where the neophyte matures into a Madhyama. Right? Because that's the whole point. When there's more anarthas, it's neophyte. When there's less anarthas, it's madhyama. Does that make sense? Because one gets, that means out of six kinds of anarthas, then four of them are with the neophyte. But two of them, that's with the madhyama. Right? Does that make sense? So four out of six. So that's supposed to be two-thirds. So I guess when you say 60%, you technically mean 66.6, right? You know, that's the actual exact, if you want to get down to, you know, numbers. Does that make sense? Yeah. It pushes it a little bit more that way, so it's okay. So that 60 is a bit low. Okay, 66, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The senses contact the object and supply the impression of it to the mind, which transmits this impression to the intelligence. Right? Because it's transmitted to the intelligence, as we said. The senses pull in unlimited information. The mind cuts it down to something and then goes into the intelligence through the memory to figure out what it is. So that's where it becomes transferred to the intelligence. The intellect then becomes modified by the object, because then that's what it is. The intelligence knows it's a chair because it's contacted a chair before. It modifies and then to take on that form of the chair. Right? Yes.
What is, not the same, because I don't even know how to say it, but like, we call a person intellectual or smart. We refer to intelligence, or we skip the mind, we skip the whole process?
They don't make a distinction really between mind and intelligence, ego. They don't really have much. I know there's some subtle flavors, but even your psychologists and psychiatrists, they don't understand either.
It's essentially as difference. In their function between mind and intelligence.
Yeah, yeah. No, there is. They're very specific. But it's not that science. They don't know, because they're starting from just perception. So they're just trying through perception, trying to understand it. So it'll be very muddled. It won't be clear. That's why pratyaksha as a beginning point is never good. So when we say, here, when they say perception, they're working at that, so they're understanding this, and then they're trying to work back from there. Or these others are starting with that perception. But it's supposed to be that you start with shabda, or authority. And then based on authority, then you try to see it. Right? In other words, authority has said something. Did we discuss this here?
Yeah.
About that authority is giving the minor and the major term. Right? So the shastra itself is the middle term, right? It's through which you can see it. It's the reason. But we have to apply it to our situation. So through contemplation, then we understand the middle term, right? Or we understand how the middle and major term connect, right? So when we can see that, that's called perception, right? Pratyaksha. Now I can see the minor, the major, and the middle term. I actually can see it and experience it. So that's, then we'd say, realization. Right? Does that make sense? Or at least understanding, I can see realization when we can function on that, or when we value functioning in that way. Right? So that's why inference is important, because it connects shabda to pratyaksha. Right? Because pratyaksha means all three are there. Shabda means all three are there. But you don't see how they're there. So you have to, through inference, figure it out. Right? You know two of them, you have to figure out the third. Does that make sense? Okay. The senses contact the object and supply the impression of it to the mind, which transmits this impression to the intellect. The intellect then becomes modified by the object, but because the intellect is unconscious substance, it cannot analyze the experience of the object by itself. Its predominance by Sattva-gun, however, enables the intellect to be reflected in the self, right? Means it itself can't do, because it's not that the intellect now does its own thing. You know, it's just like, you know, you plug in external drug. It's not that it does its own thing and goes through and watches a movie and, you know, does some, you know, word processing and all that. No, it's only going to do, because unless you put the con, it doesn't do anything. So the intellect is not going to do anything. You know? It's kind of scary how the IT element, you actually have some, you know, examples that people can relate to, because other examples don't always work anymore. Before it was kind of like you could use it and a few people would get it. Now it's kind of like everybody gets that, and the other examples is not necessarily right. Okay. The intellect becomes modified by the object, but because the intellect is unconscious substance, it cannot analyze the experience of the object by itself. Right? It can analyze what it is by previous experience. Right, the memory of previous experience. But the experience itself, it can't do. But because of Satvagun, it's closest to the soul. So therefore, through the intelligence, the soul is able to perceive this. Right? Does that make sense? And the self is in turn also reflected in the mirror of the intellect, which contains the object, modification of the object. In this way, the intellect then experiences the object. So the soul is then reflected there. And so then now it's there's that experience. Right? But the soul identifies with that, so it soul thinks, I'm experiencing this. Right? So that's the problem. Is that it's all happening outside of us. We're only witnessing it, but we think, because of identifying, we think, I am that.
Mm-hmm. The soul is observing the self
reflected in the intellect, and the material objects are reflected in the intellect. So in other words, it sees itself and the object there, so you think, I'm together with that.
Yeah.
And so therefore that experience you're getting, but you're only watching that. Wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's completely different than what we thought is actually going on. But that's the whole point, is here it is separated like that, in the spiritual world it's not. You know. So we think this whole mechanical process is so great. You know, what about the natural form of it? Right? But the point is as long as you think I'm the controller and enjoy, it's reduced down to this mechanical state. So how much can you get out of it? You know what I'm saying? You know, like watching the world through a keyhole or something, you know, it's like, in this way the intellect, okay. This theory of reflection is also accepted by Vyasa in his commentary on the Yoga Sutras. So it means this is mechanically how it works. Now, how important this is to us, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So this isn't so prominent. But it explains when Krishna talks about it. He'll talk about buddhi and all that. So buddhi yoga means this whole process, you're engaging in the Lord's service. So that's buddhi yoga. Right, because your actual connection with the material nature is through buddhi, so it's buddhi yoga. Yeah. According to the second view held by Vachaspati Misra, perception is a process of one-sided reflection. There is a reflection of the self in the intellect, but there's no reflection of the intellect back into the self. He maintains that an object comes into contact with the senses, and its impression reaches the mind, and it is transferred to the intellect, and that the intellect then becomes modified into the form of the object. So far, it's the same. It's at this stage that the ever-radiating light of the self illuminates the clean septic mirror of the intellect, which reflects the same light onto the object. The intellect then experiences the object as if the intellect were a conscious being. The intellect is just like a mirror that reflects the light of a lamp, and itself becomes capable of illuminating other objects as well. This means that the intellect, but not the self, experiences the pain, pleasure, and neutrality of worldly objects. While according to Vijnana Bhikshu, the pleasure, pain, and indifference are experienced by the self because the self and the intellect are reflecting each other. Right? So in other words, the other one's keeping it more that it's all going on and we're just sitting here. But the only point is that why would we be reflecting the consciousness into the mirror of the intelligence in the first place, unless there was something to gain by it? Right? So it's because it wants to. So you could say technically the mechanics of that enjoyment are being done by the intelligence, but the soul identifying with it, it's the same. So the point is if you're getting that effect, it's the same. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
When we suffer the pain and pleasure, who's experiencing that?
We're experiencing it.
We, okay, but we are, as the soul who's dormant, according to our theory, the soul is dormant, so we don't, it does not experience anything.
No, we don't say it doesn't experience. What we're saying is that the soul's not doing it, but because it's identifying with what's there. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you watch a play. Are you doing any of that? No, you're just sitting there watching. But as you identify with the characters and all that, it means if the play is done nicely, you identify with the situation. So then the experiences of the actors, you experience. So you're actually experiencing it. So that's what Jnana Bhikshu is saying. But what's his name? It's the Mishra. Vachaspati Mishra. He's saying is you're not experiencing anything at all. It's just going on the stage. They're feeling all these things. You're feeling nothing. So technically, it's not exactly right. It means in trying to separate the soul from that, because then if I'm experiencing it, then it brings out that element of the personal kind of thing and all that. So then you have to deal with the thing is, why would you have that? Why would you be able to relate to that unless there's something behind? Because by causation, then there can't be something in the gross that's not there in the subtle. Right? So therefore, if I can appreciate that, and I'm experiencing that, that means the elements of pleasure, pain, and all those things of experiences are part of the soul. So if I want to say the soul is just consciousness, you know, without all these other things, then you run into problems there. You know what I'm saying? So it's easier then to say is that we're just more, just the observer, you're taking that to extreme, that actually I'm not. Technically, in one sense, you're not, because you're not on the stage and you haven't just got stabbed and you haven't just, you know, how do you say, you know, killed off all your sons without knowing it, or, you know, your daughter didn't just run off with this one or that one, or, you know, I'm saying, you know, you're not Lear, right? You know, so you're actually not. They're doing, but you're identifying with it, so you're experiencing. So he's trying to separate that even more, that actually you're not experiencing, they're experiencing it. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. So therefore he's saying it's only one-sided. But in actuality, it's the soul who's experiencing.
Doesn't he want to make the whole thing on the intellect?
He puts it all on the intellect, because then the problem comes is, how did the intellect start the whole process? Because only after the senses brought the thing in, and it was modified and all that, then the soul is reflecting on it. But the point is where did they get the potency to do that in the first place? That's the weakness in Vachaspatis. Right? So Vijnana Bhikshu is more... Right? Does that make sense? It has more of a substance, because it started from the soul, went out, reflected back. So that's the thing. And then he reflects into that again. You know, the value and the experience, which then brings it... You know, so it's just an ongoing process. While the other one is kind of like the intellect is working on its own and mind, and then the soul is kind of like watching that, but not really experiencing, but because he's watching it, the soul experiences. So it becomes a little bit kind of reduced in its sense of reality. So the impersonal element is put more forward by the Vachaspati, right? For Vijnana Bhikshu, then it's more in line with actual the reality. Yes.
Mars, is it because of attachment that one see the soul use pain or pleasure to be good or bad?
Yes, because like good or bad or this, and also that one would get involved in those things, because certain things they don't get involved in. You know, it's like, you know, I'm saying, you know, that, you know, for some reason it's that, you know, the sister's sitting there watching something on the television. She's getting all involved. The brother comes and sits down and watches for a little while. He doesn't get involved, says, "This is stupid," and then tries to grab the remote, right? There's a big fight because he doesn't see anything there. There's nothing there to experience because the value system is different. So all it is you're pulling different things. It's what's being pulled, then you find out what's value. So the mind has pulled it, and it'll say, this is a value, right? But for the other person, their mind is interpreting other things are a value. So that's all. But same things are there. Everybody's seeing technically the same thing. But what they see is different. That's why when something happens and then afterwards people go and, you know, to ask questions and there's an inquiry and they ask 30 different people and they get 30 different answers because the value systems are different. So what they see, what they experience is different. Right? Because otherwise it was this. Why would your intellect pull this in and then you identify with it? You know, just it brings up anything and you're happy. You know, that kind of makes the soul pretty stupid. You know, that anything can come along that they... So why would it pull in those unless it's pulling in the values of the soul by its consciousness? So you'd have to start from there. Does that make sense? So in other words, this mysterious one kind of reduces it down kind of... In other words, it's the lower end, so it's more kind of like stripped of anything like Nyaya and Vaisheshika. While the Vijnana Bhikshu is more like the higher end where it's actually the Vaishnav view of it, but you know whether he's is he a Vaishnav or he's a...
No, he was the person who pointed out that the original Sankhya was Vaishnav.
Was Vaishnav, Vijnana Bhikshu. And so he maintains that himself, or...
I don't know if he's Vaishnav himself.
But at least he points it out. So in other words, he's gotten as close as there. So it's like he's dealing with it in a realistic way, but whether he's made that commitment himself, right, where he's become, what was that word we were using? For the inquisitive being the... you know that word that they was always using for the innocent? The Sanskrit word.
Manisha.
Huh?
Manisha?
No, not Manisha. The Wasn't it something with a B or something? I don't know. Balisha. Oh, I said Manisha. Balisha. Yeah, Balisha. So then he's, you know, there's that end. Well, the other one is towards, you know, indifference end. You know, he's indifferent. We're indifferent, right?
Funny because the chastity mishra sounds more like consistent with the non-theistic sankhya.
Yeah,
it's
much more like that. That it's just, you know, it's all just nothing, you know. So.
Maharaj, you get example of identifying with the play or drama, which
right.
So there's example of dream also, in which a person is dreaming something. And we can see that he is suffering because he is seeing something in the dream.
Right.
So once he wakes up, then the dream's existence is, I mean, it's not there. Like, so I wanted to know whether we as Vaishnavas approve of this example, because the dream is not a reality, right? But we say material world is a reality.
Yeah.
So do we agree with this example? Because as soon as dream ends, then there is no existence for the dream.
Yeah, but you still exist. That's the difference. You know what I'm saying? It means we'll use it that way, and it means that. The Mayavadis use it. They say you wake up and then it's not there, but still, you know, the room and your bed and everything else still exist. That's the weakness in the Mayavadis argument. You know, but all of their weaknesses, you know, there's a green bird and a green tree. It's all green, yes, but there's still a bird in the tree. You know, it doesn't become one. You know. Does that make sense? So in other words, you wake up from identifying with the material reality, and then you are able to appreciate the actual reality. So the actual reality is the spiritual view, spiritual consciousness. Is that right? Okay. Both of these views are possible within the major theory of reflectionism because the self's experience of external objects or pain and pleasure depends on the intensity of its identification with the intellect. Right? If you don't identify, then it don't. So you can say it's for the person who's liberated, it's only one way because he doesn't actually identify with it. But the point is it's not that the intelligence is still going on there with, you know, a major, you know, Shakespeare, you know, tragedy there, It doesn't deal in that anymore. So it's just it's that's reduced because it's your way of dealing. One-sided reflection and reciprocal reflection are both valid views because whatever comes to the intelligence is experienced by the self. A self-created state of oneness between the self and the intellect exists, but if the identification is loosened a bit, then the consciousness radiating from the self allows the intellect to appear as though it were conscious, and thus the intellect experiences the external object. The more the identification is loosened, the more the intellect experiences, and the more the self watches the experiencing intellect as a witness. So in other words, it's just more of the conditioned state or the liberated state. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is it's because of consciousness these things go on, but it's not that it's important, so important to you, but this is what goes on. Then you identify this is important to them, or this is important to here, or this could be used for Krishna. Or, does that make sense? Shankya recognizes two kinds of perception, indeterminate and determinate. The first is called alochana, which means merely seeing the object. It arises at the moment of contact between the senses and the object and is antecedent to all mental analysis and synthesis of sensory data. It means you just come in contact with it. Right? So you haven't analyzed good, bad, you know, or otherwise. Right? In this state, there is recognition of the object as mere something without any recognition of it as a specific object. Determinate perception, in contrast, is the result of the analysis, synthesis, and interpretation of sensory data by the mind. This type of perception is called vivekshana, meaning interpretation of the object. Because it is the determinate cognition of an object as a particular identifiable thing. In other words, you've seen it, but you haven't analyzed it. So you haven't really, there's no experience, there's nothing. So that's what will be the alochana, simply merely seeing it. The other one is then you've interpreted, vivekchana. You've actually interpreted what it is. So now, seeing it, that's just the senses. Now, the important thing is how you interpret it. You interpret it according to Krishna consciousness, that's valid. You interpret it according to mundane consciousness, it's actually still illusory.
Yes? Isn't kind of one after another?
Yeah, no, one naturally comes after the other. Now, all I'm mentioning is that first is alochana. You merely see it, then you analyze it. So there's that moment that it's there. What we're saying is in analyzation, that's then what's important. Because otherwise we could say, okay, if I give up mundane, I stop seeing everything. No. I mean, seeing is there. It's how you analyze it. So the point is do I analyze it in pure consciousness or analyze it in polluted consciousness?
So the first one would be the same.
That wouldn't change. Like that. That's going to be according to the quality of the sense that you have, how that first will be. If you have a better sense, you know, you can get more finer detail. But it's how you interpret it that's actually important. You know what I'm saying? Just like some people can smell things, they don't smell much. Others can get all subtle things out of it. So the point is that. But how you interpret that, that's what's important. You know, like that. So, yeah.
Why then, if somebody can understand, they have the understanding, and they can see with the intellect, then why they still do something stupid?
Because realization is there. Seeing is one thing, and having realization is another. So that's why practice is there. You see it, you apply it. Then you get realization. When you have realization, then you value it, so you'll always apply it in that way, in the proper way. You know what I'm saying? But if you only understand, you may or may not apply it in the proper way. You know, just like the person smoking knows it's bad. So he has knowledge, but not realization. So therefore, he still might smoke. But the person who realizes it's bad, he doesn't smoke. Even if others are smoking, he doesn't care. Does that make sense?
But has the value changed then?
The value changes. So realization means values changed. All right. Understanding means you have intellectually comprehended it. You know, it means that you understand the facts by understanding. But realization means those facts have a meaning to you. They have a value.
I thought the values, they were always the same, but perception changed?
You have that would then you would use different terminology. Then you would say the nimitic or the conditioning is the same, but your value of how you use it, that would change. So that would be your perception. You know what I'm saying? So in all these, the difficulty is where to apply which one, right? In other words, the general principle of what's going on is what Vijnana Bhikshu is saying, right? But that advanced stage where you can separate yourself and things like that, that's what Vachaspati Misra is saying. But whether he's making those distinctions, you don't necessarily get the idea. Because it hasn't been said, we've been pointing out from the information that's given in the Shankhya, you can get these two understandings. But the difficulty comes is that how you apply them, in other words, the interpretation. In other words, you can alocha, you can see these two principles from the information given. But actually the interpretation is what's important. So one, you know, you get more, because the point is if it's a matter of the personal, it's like I'm involved here, I'm involved there. But in the middle, I'm not involved. You know, there's that interim state between the two. Right? But by the other one, it's kind of like the interim state is the state you want to get to. It's like the more advanced position. But it's... Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. One gives rise more to being able to appreciate spiritual experience, while one doesn't. Does that make sense? So then, depending on the situation, how you're using it, then you would use one or the other. You know, not that the two things aren't there, but the soul doesn't invest itself anymore. So that's why it's only one way. But it's not that as a mechanics, it's only one way or two. Right? It's naturally two, but the soul, whether he invests himself or not, therefore, you know what I'm saying? Like the Madhyama Bhakta is interacting socially with the envious. But it's not a two-way reciprocation. You understand? Right? But with Vaishnavs, it's two-way. Because of the value. Right? So therefore the experience is there. The other one, it's only one way because the experience is not there. Does that make sense?
To change our value means to purify in connection to Krishna. Value.
Yes, purify connection with Krishna. But the most important is the connection with Krishna, because that's what will purify. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I'm saying? But by connecting it to Krishna, it becomes purified. Mm-hmm. But it's the connection to Krishna that's important. The purification is secondary. Mm-hmm. That just comes automatically. Because mm-hmm. Right? Krishna is supremely pure, so anything he contacts automatically becomes purified. Like Putana, when Krishna killed Putana, then even though, you know, he had this, you know, 12-mile, you know, demon body there, when they burnt the body, it smelled nice because it was completely purified because of contacting Krishna. Like that. So, but that's the secondary point. This point is because of that connection, that service to Krishna, that's what's doing it. Right? Because we don't want to, means becoming purified is important only because then we don't do things we shouldn't be doing. Yes. Or you know, in other words, the potential for being Krishna conscious is greater. That's why a purified state is more valued. But it's not that the purified state is the cause of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is independent. Krishna consciousness is caused by Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, then the smartas would all be great devotees because they're very pure. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, inference. Knowledge derived through the universal or invariable relationship between two things is called anuman, inference. The Shankhya concept of inference is slightly different from that held by Nyaya philosophy. In Shankhya, inference is of two kinds, vita and avita. Vita is based on a universal affirmation proposition, and avita is based on a universal negative proposition. Okay. So it's not there. dogs don't fly. Vita, positive inferences of two kinds. Purvavat. Yeah, because in Vedanta Sutra, you always say there's purvavat used. Samanyatot drishta. And samanyatot drishta. Purvavat, inferences based on previously observed uniform concomitance between two things. Right? In other words, you've seen before that these two things always connect together. For example, one can infer the existence of fire from the existence of smoke, because one has already observed that smoke is always accompanied by fire. Samanyatodrishta, inference is not based on any previously observed concomitance between the middle and major terms. Right? This type of inference does, however, require facts that are uniformly related to the middle and major terms. Right? So still there's going to be a connection between middle and major. For example, how can we know that we have senses? One cannot perceive his senses because they are beyond their own reach. So one must accept the existence of the senses by inference. Their existence can be inferred in the following way. For all action, some kind of instrument is needed. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching are actions that must have their corresponding instruments. The senses are these instruments. Negative inference, avita, is explained in the Nyaya system as... Oh, okay, so that was both... Those were positive. Okay, so the direct and the indirect. So in other words, one is... Yeah. In other words, within inference, then you're connecting the middle and the major term by direct perception, what you've perceived in the past by direct perception, or what you're using inference to find out the inference, right? Does that make sense? So using inference on inference, or using perception on inference. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So the fire and the smoke, you've seen that, you've experienced that. But the senses, you cannot actually tell that you have the sense of smell. The instrument of smelling means you're smelling things. So to be able to smell, you have to have an instrument. So therefore, there must be the sense of smell. But you're never going to actually see it. It can't be. It's beyond that. Right? So it's only through inference then you can establish that it's like that. But at the same time, as it has the purvavat element, that you know something is able to be accomplished through an instrument. So that is there. Now you're applying that onto this. You know what I'm saying? So again, within that, does that make some sense? It's getting too. I'm saying this is really great fun. Whether anybody else is enjoying the fun here, I don't know.
You're implying the inferred sense
is being inferred. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, inference is a form of valid knowledge. So you're using inference as the valid knowledge to establish the inference. Or you're using perception as the valid knowledge to establish the inference. Does that make sense? It means, in other words, things that you can perceive, you would use those naturally. But things that you can't perceive, you have to use inference as the valid authority to establish the connection between the major and minor terms. Because there's certain things you'll never... Just like we're not seeing ourselves, but we can infer that the soul is there because there's life. There's consciousness. Does that make sense? So therefore, we're using inference to establish that fact. You know? So it's valid knowledge.
So like Prabhupada says, you have studied logic, and then you'll say about the symptoms of life, you know.
Oh, okay.
You look at these two things, and you see there's all these symptoms, you know, with animals.
Yeah. Okay, so he's meaning about inference there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's establishing the middle term there.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? No? Okay. No, but it's because everything is there, so you have to have the different kinds of this and that, because otherwise you get confused. Well, how do you know this is or that is? So they've got it down where there's no confusion. So they take everything and split the hairs in so many different ways, right? But it's less than 10,000, you know, so that therefore we can relate to it, right? You know, if it goes beyond 10,000, that's more splits than we can handle, right?
Because it's smaller than us?
Yeah, it's smaller than us, yeah. But it can't be smaller than us because we're the smallest other than the super soul, so therefore it can't happen. So that's the good part about it. Oh, well. So you're wondering, what are these crazy people going on about? Mm-hmm. You catch what we're talking about, or?
Actually, I was not there from this.
Oh, okay. Okay. Negative inference. So that was positive, right? So in other words, it's there, because it's a fact. The fact is either perceived or through inference, then it's understood. But there's a fact. There's a positive existence of something, right? So now here's the negative. Negative inference, avita, is explained in the Nyaya system as seshavat, in which an inference results by the elimination of all other positive alternatives. For example, a certain whole number is inferred to be 2 because it has been determined that it is not 3 or more, nor is it 1 or less. Yet it is a certain positive integer, therefore it is 2. Right? In other words, it's through that just by it's not this, it's not this, it's not that. So what's ever left? You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like there's some kids in the back of the room making trouble. Teacher looks up, there's 3 kids back there. Okay, you ask the first one, is he making the trouble? He'll say no. You ask the second one, is he making the trouble? He'll say no. So by negative inference here, then it means the third one is the one making trouble.
Right?
No, but that's how you deal with it, and they won't do that again. Especially because if you work it out that the one that's the biggest and toughest and nastiest is the last one you ask, then he'll make sure that the first two don't ever do that again. So you have to cleverly apply your avita, you know, the seshavat, you know, method. Okay, does that make sense? So positive is actually, you can establish that it's there. Negative means you can never establish, you can't really establish. It's just that nothing else is there, so it's what's left. Right? Okay, so that's it. So just, they categorize it into these two. They don't go into such detail as the Nyaya system, it appears. So that's why when we say it's different from, it just means that they don't classify in such technical points. Because for them, it's analyzing the world is important, not as much their system of analyzation. While for Nyaya, the system of analyzation is the all in all, not so much what you're analyzing. Right? So it's just a different value, a different approach.
So it's all about the car rather than driving it?
Yeah, yeah.
The engine?
Yeah, it's all about like that, yeah. Well, the other one is, you know, if you don't have an engine, you don't drive. But more than that, they don't have to get down into all the fine little details of you.
So Maharaj, you can say they use different approaches to prove the point that the self is different from matter.
Yes.
So it's different elements.
Yes.
They have common goal.
Yes, yes. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. Can we say that those who established those systems, they needed to find their own nisha kind of thing? So they took some points and then they established that because everything else was kind of occupied already?
I'm not sure you could take it that far.
because
otherwise then you'd end up with more than 6. Right, unless it was just they were so intelligent to understand that everything else is there. You know, it's just like, you know, the 2 chess masters sit down and the first one moves, then the other one goes, "You won," you know, like that. It's just that, but only that, because they can see that either 30 down the line is then, you know, he's won, you know, like that. Does that make sense? But it's more of the modes of nature are just an act. And so the modes of nature allow 6 different interpretations that you could have on the Veda. you know, that are bogus, right? But the point is that they're all portions of the one actual. Means, in other words, you've taken something out where it doesn't become that thing anymore. Though it's part of it, just like the person who makes menus, then they think that they're cooking. But actually, they're not cooking. So if they're in connection with cooks, it's useful. But if they're just on their own, and they're not contacting cooks, there's no food being produced. But somehow or another, they've taken a part of this, the logical part, the atomic part, the Shankya part, the yoga part, the engaging the activities part, or the universality, the philosophy part. But they're unable to see it in connection with the actual position of the Vaishnava. So it becomes bogus, because on its own it won't function alone. Because it's not the form that's being used. It's the actual God consciousness that's the primary. So they're taking the secondary, but they're only dealing with parts of the secondary. Right? Now, if they just took that part and connected it to the Lord, then in itself it becomes perfect. But then you could say, is the Nyaya thing connected, you know, Vaishnava Nyaya element would only work for someone who had that conditioning, that Nyaya in that form would be fully engaging to them. You know what I'm saying? But not many people, it wouldn't apply to many people. So the whole, but let's say something like Jaimini, that would apply to more people because more people are involved in karma. But still, as they perform karma, they get knowledge and detachment. So at one point, it won't be so important for them, right? So then your uttaramimamsa would naturally. So there would be just this natural going through these stages. So they're all parts of the Vaishnava system. But because they've been separated from the system, and they lack that ability to connect you to the Lord, and they have all these gaps. Because, in other words, Nyaya is there's the logical form. What about the rest of the form? What about what you're actually discussing? That they don't have, so that they have to fill in. So that's the problem, is you don't have it, so you fill in with something. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's like, you don't have, so therefore you have menus, you put it out on, you know, you put just put up all varieties of menus on the internet, and some people can take them and do things with them and things like that. So you feel that you're actually cooking, but you're not cooking. But you've made some contact that now to follow this, then you give all this extra stuff, and you know what I'm saying? Somebody says, you fill in for what's missing. Right. Yes.
Maharaj, Purvarat, would that be also considered as previously experienced, not just observed?
Yes, because observed means you have to, there has to be some understanding, otherwise why would it be there in the intellect? Right? If it observed it, but if it hasn't been appreciated, it won't remain in the memory. So therefore, the mind can't access that and then connect the sense, you know, the sensory object, you know, through the intelligence. Mm-hmm. You have to have, you've had that experience.
Yes. And so, in regards with realization, Purvarat would be more of a stronger thing to make, to obtain.
Stronger than?
Than the Samayanya to Drishta. Because you're just gathering information.
You can, but you're gathering, but you're inferring, and through that inference, you can therefore experience
as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's not directly perceived through the senses. Well, this is indirectly. In other words, you're experiencing it through inference. And so I said it's inference on inference. Okay. While the other one is perception on inference. You know, in other words, you're trying to perceive something, and you're using another perception to fill in the blank, yes. Right? But here is that inference simply means there's a blank. You know, yes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, like in algebra, you have, you know, A plus B equals X. So you're trying to fill in X. So you can get that through direct perception or get it through inference. That's all. But once you've gotten it, then it becomes you know, your experience, then it's experienced, so the perception is there. Is that, yeah? What is your point? You made a said a point before.
Yeah, I was just thinking that Nyaya emphasizes the logic in order to demonstrate how the soul is different from matter.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
And then Vaisheshika, the same goal. They emphasize the Atman theory.
Yes. Yes.
And then Sankhya will emphasize the workings of the material energy, just to put
right.
the same product, be different from matter. So
yeah.
from different angles of vision, they try to convince us that we are not...
You're separate from... Yeah.
And then yoga will be using
the mind.
Right, mind comes into the stage. From
Okay. Yeah. Does that make sense? Is that, in other words, they're all trying to different approaches how to prove that the soul is different from matter. Right, with the idea that soul will be liberated from the problems of interacting with matter. Right, because that's all the philosophy, all the six systems are trying to establish that, trying to find a solution to the difficulties of being in material existence. Right, that's the common point. How we can become, how we can free ourselves from material pain. Right, but to know that you have to know who you are as the soul. So all of them will accept the soul. Right, means if you don't accept the soul, that's non-Vedic. So that'll be Buddhism or something else. Right, does that make sense? So then, so they're trying to establish that different approaches to how you can separate yourself. Yes. Okay.
Maybe revert back into the natural state.
Yes,
for a few minutes.
How you say it? You know, the particularly unspiritually directed enthusiasms. Okay. Yeah, okay. So does that make sense? So all of them are trying to solve that problem. So all of them have to establish the soul and separate it from the material experience. You know, so they're all doing that. But what all of them fail to do is then, having done that, connect the soul to the Supreme Lord and the positive, you know, experience. So all they're trying to do is get rid of the negative, but they don't know how to establish the positive. So that's again, where then we will that means they're considered bogus because of that, right? I mean, they consider them quite good. That's the problem. Is they'll just go through each one and around again. But the ultimate solution, right? The final solution is to get out of the material world and go back to Godhead, right? So simply only the negative is not a final solution.
These systems, they show that you are indeed a fish out of water.
Yeah.
They don't go past that.
Yeah.
You won't be happy as a fish out of water.
Yeah, but they don't know that going back into the water is where it belongs.
Yeah.
They somehow will work out some nice thing on the beach.
Yeah.
You know, don't go inland.
Stay on the beach.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chanitai Gaur Vedanti.
Thank you.